listening to Bondi Tunes, international broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Australia and New Zealand. I'm Henry in Sydney. I'm joined by our North America correspondents, Ronan Seagrave in Edmonton, which is where he is at the moment, in Canada, and Thomas Booker in San Antonio de Bayar, which I always pronounce with a Spanish accent, in Texas. Now, look, guys, welcome to the show for a start.
Good evening, Henry.
Now, Trump's very big special announcement has now happened. He will run for president for a third time in 2024. But before we talk about that, let's discuss the recent missile attack on a rural town in Poland, which apparently has killed two people. They're a NATO country, in case anyone doesn't know. Who are the culprits, guys?
We don't know, Henry. There's two theories. One is that it is a stray Russian missile. They launched no less than 100 missiles at Ukraine today. It was actually the largest single daily missile attack since the war started on the 24th of February. And that these were sort of off course and a mistake in terms of landing in Poland. Or it is sort of anti-aircraft weaponry that has strayed into Poland by mistake. Now, we're getting conflicting information, Henry. You know, one minute a Polish spokesman is saying it's definitely a Russian-made missile. Then, you know, we had Joe Biden today saying no, the trajectory that the American intelligence says did not show this missile coming from Russia. So we just don't know. What's happening at the moment, Henry, is sort of a flurry of meetings. It was at the G20 summit. There was a meeting of G7. So Poland, Henry, is talking about triggering something called Article 4 and of the NATO treaty. Now, Article 4 is different from Article 5. Article 5 is where a NATO nation has been attacked by a hostile foreign power, such as Russia, and that can immediately trigger that is assumed as an attack on all NATO countries and can trigger a military response. That's not what Poland is saying and doing. It seems to accept that if this was coming from Russia, that it was an accident, it was not intentional. Mm. And what Article 4 means, Henry, is that troops would be put on a higher state of readiness, that the Polish government would step up, you know, air patrols of its own defences. There could be further troop deployments, defensive troop deployments in the eastern flank of NATO, i.e. Poland and the Baltic. There could be more heavy weaponry moved by NATO into, you know, otherwise it might take a more aggressive self-defence.
I just want to bring Thomas in. You know, it is interesting. A lot of people, I've been watching CNN during the daytime here in Australia. It is interesting that Biden did say it's not necessarily from Russia. Thomas.
Well, I think it's all too preliminary to say, but I mean, it was happening during a Russian missile attack, and Russia, I mean, they've been going after the infrastructure in Ukraine quite specifically, but also the guidance technology. I don't know what, I just hear that the quality of the Russian weaponry is really poor, and it wouldn't surprise me if some of their missiles went off course. And the whole assault on Ukraine by the Russians is entirely reckless, and they apparently care not what peripheral damage and how much suffering they're causing. They just want to try to demoralize the country and eventually move in and absorb it, which is not happening. Mm. So, yeah, if there are two casualties there, I think Poland has a pretty serious grievance against Russia.
Yeah, and the fact that they're from, you know, that they're a part of NATO is really a big deal, isn't it, Ronan? Because, you know, what NATO gets really pissed off when something like this happens, because, you know, Ukraine was not part of NATO, and the Americans and allied forces did not want to move in and you know, directly fight the Russians. But when it comes to messing around with NATO, it's quite another story, isn't it?
It's extremely serious and extremely dangerous, Henry. I think you're right. a major effort has been made, led by Joe Biden and others, to ensure that NATO does not become a direct combatant in this war. NATO countries are supplying, you know, heavy weaponry and materials to Ukraine, and you know, there's been a lot actually. There's actually been meetings happening this week between U.S., the CIA in the U.S. and the Russian intelligence services. Now, what those meetings have been about, as far as we know, have been about a couple of things. One, saying to the Russians repeatedly that NATO does not intend, unless attacked, to become a combatant in this war, to try and ensure that what happened today actually doesn't happen in terms of, you know, stray missiles or some sort of, you know, incident happening that could spark something off. There's a desire by both countries, I think, for that not to happen. And I think the other purpose was, again, the US reminding Russia that if, you know, a NATO country is attacked, the consequences for Russia will be absolutely catastrophic, i.e. NATO would completely destroy Russian conventional forces, which it is more than capable of doing. I mean, this idea, as we've talked about before, Henry, that Russia is some kind of, you know, massive conventional military threat to Eastern Europe is becoming ludicrous. If they cannot actually hold on to small areas of territory in the Donbass in Ukraine, yes. The idea of them sweeping into the body is just becoming, frankly, ludicrous. And that's why we've had the nuclear saber rattling. But in the end, everybody knows that's a bluff. Putin knows, again, if he were to use a tactical nuclear weapon, and again, Biden and NATO have been very clear about this, if he were to use a battlefield tactical nuclear weapon, NATO would respond and they would take out all Russian conventional military forces. Now, that is not something that Putin wants, but in a way, it's almost quite pathetic that, you know, the supposed Russian war machine has failed to such a spectacular extent here that it's sort of reduced to that. But everybody knows he's not actually going to do it. So I think what's also happening behind the scenes, Henry, and I think is becoming more obvious, is maneuvering, particularly by Joe Biden, to get Zelensky and Putin to talk and to bring this war to an end.
Is there any point in that, though? You know,
maybe. Look, at some point this has to end. And there are people, you know, saying, well, Russia needs to be completely humiliated. I'm actually not one of them. I'm kind of, you know, Henry Kissinger, real politic here. Russia is Russia. Mm. I think the war has succeeded with absolutely horrific consequences, but it has succeeded in degrading Russian conventional military capability. I see nothing to be gained by completely humiliating Russia, because the grievance that built up with Vladimir Putin and actually could build up again in a future Russian leader, it was around what they saw as previous humiliations, the expansion of NATO into Eastern Europe. I don't think there's any long-term strategic value for the West going down that path. I also think that Zelensky has to cut out the rhetoric saying every Russian needs to be driven. I don't think that's helpful. His country is suffering and his people are suffering. And I admire Zelensky, but at some point, the only way in which this is going to end is Zelensky, and if he's still in power, Vladimir Putin meeting and having a process of talks and discussions that brings this war to an end. There is no other way in which it can end, or else it just drags on, Henry, into an endless kind of military stalemate. You know, Russian rocket attacks happening in Ukraine, the Russians getting bogged down in the Donbass and a kind of war of attrition. Nothing much will happen, Henry, in terms of conventional battlefield war, particularly at the Donbass theater of war, because it's winter. But it has to come to an end, and the only way it will come to an end is by people sitting down at a table.
Okay, Thomas, thoughts on that?
Well, I think personally, you know, humiliating the Russians, you know, if they get their feelings hurt or something, I'm not really going to get. I know for the purpose of the pragmatism of it, sort of demands it. But the Russians were blatantly the aggressors. They had a baseless justification for their stealing another country. And I think at this point in Ukraine, I think the people of Ukraine want Crimea back. They want to have Ukraine as it was prior to, you know, 2008, and I think that's when they perpetrated the Russians assaulted them the first time. So I frankly, the other point about it, I don't see Putin. I'm not sure Putin's capable of he, first of all, he doesn't want to emerge from Russia. He doesn't want to meet in person with any, you know, necessarily with anybody in Europe, or even risk coming out of his hole in the ground. I think the man is extremely paranoid. I think he's for a Russian, it's silly to say, but he does seem to be mentally ill.
there's a lot of talk about serious
personality disorder with Putin, and I think that there a lot of it stems from the feelings of inadequacy. He was started out life as just a mere apparatchik. He helped the Stasi in Germany when the Soviet Union was still in existence. And he just sat in a room and watched other people beat people, you know, beat dissidents up and torture people. And I think that's his basically the only depth the man has to him. So I think he would not be at all interested in talking to Zelensky. And I think Ukraine is not at all interested in, you know, shaking hands and making up. If I were a Ukrainian, I would be extremely infuriated at what happened in the country.
I think that depends how it's orchestrated. I think if we were, assuming there was to be a face-to-face meeting, it could be done by video, but assuming there was to be a face-to-face meeting, you know, Turkey or Israel or possible locations, certainly a kind of third country where, you know, there are security guarantees.
Neutral territory.
It reminds me of Reykjavik, you know, Reagan and Gorbachev. And it can happen, and this happened in Iceland in 1985.
I think it will happen, Henry. I think it has to happen. And I understand what Thomas is saying about Putin and all these kind of things. And I say, though, that even if Putin were to go, there's no guarantee that whoever replaces him would be any way better. You know, his defense minister, who clearly would be a candidate, is the architect behind all this indiscriminate bombing. From Winnipeg, Canada, Ronan Seagrave on
iTunes International. If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Edmonton in Canada and Thomas Booker in San Antonio in Texas. I'm Henry in Sydney for Bondi Tunes International. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, shall we? Now, as I mentioned at the start of this broadcast, Trump's big special announcement is that he's going to run for president.
Hang on a second, Henry, if you're going to talk about that, just a second.
Are you okay, Thomas?
No, I'm just having a beer.
Oh, that's okay. Oh, I see. Okay. Sorry, Thomas, what did you just do there?
I popped the cap off a bottle.
Did you send me one?
Hang on, I could.
Jeez. Come on. Oh, there. Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Sorry, Henry. I didn't mean to be
so. Look, I was so wrapped up in Trump's very big, very special announcement that he'll run for president for a third time in 2024. Now, here's an interesting stat for you guys. 6 out of 10 Americans say they don't want Trump to run again. And that's according to a recent poll by CNN. What do you reckon, guys?
I can see that. He has a maniacal base, that they are a minority and they can make a lot of noise, but I think at the moment they're politically impotent. They can make trouble, but I don't think they're going to. I think the Republican Party itself is much more of a sophisticated criminal organization, and it can function well without Trump. They're smarter than he is, and they're the more devious.
Ronan Seagrave in Canada, you mentioned that Biden would be going, yes.
Absolutely. He beat him before, and he'll do it again. And I think, you know, the reason why he's made this announcement today, I mean, you know, he just droned on for an hour and more, is trying to obviously get the one up on Ron DeSantis, the newly elected governor. Mm-hmm. Ron the Sanctimonious.
They hate each other. And interesting, on a side point, the right-wing networks such as Fox News have switched away from Trump, have gone on to DeSantis. Let's just explain DeSantis to people. He is the governor of Florida, and he's won again by a large majority, really, isn't it fair to say?
Yeah, he has, and you know, he's 43, the younger man. Mm-hmm. His family looks like they've come off a Hollywood casting studio.
So he's trendy.
Yeah, the thing though about him is that even though there probably wasn't much of a display tonight, and which it pains me to say, you know, Trump has some kind of charisma, you know, and
oh, of course.
Yeah, DeSantis has not.
So did Stalin. So did Hitler. They all had that, you know.
Yeah.
DeSantis doesn't have any of that. That said, the other problems Trump is going to have, you know, yes, Thomas is absolutely right. The sort of establishment and professional arm of the Republican Party is going to do whatever it can to ensure that DeSantis is a nominee in 2024, figuring he might have a shot. While the base will attempt to override that and make Trump stop.
Can I just ask, Ronan, it's interesting that DeSantis would be running for a national position, as in president, because of his values. I mean, really? Does the whole of America think like him? And explain his values.
Well, his values are Trumpian. I mean, in terms of, you know, he was
anti-abortion,
no COVID, no mask mandates or any kind of public health restrictions. He's raged, you know, what he calls the culture war, and he's declared Florida the anti-woke state, banning sort of, you know, teaching of LGBTQ material in schools, you know, anti-transgender.
But what I'm asking, Ronan, is would he be acceptable? You said they're Trumpian values, but Trump doesn't really talk about that stuff. He does.
But this is it, Henry. I think, you know, Trump won in 2016. Yeah, there were a lot of...
Well, that was because of Hillary Clinton's dirty laundry.
Plus a lot of disaffected, normally blue-collar Democrat voters who felt the party had abandoned them. Now, the Democratic Party's worked incredibly hard to get a lot of those voters back, as well as wooing other voters in what are now the really key swing states like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Nevada. And this is not 2016. And if you look at the results of the elections in 2018, 2020, 2022, none of them could be considered in any way rip-roaring successes for the Republican Party. And why is that? The root cause of that is Trump. And I have no doubt. I was listening to Fox News where they had, you know, Mike Huckabee and other people going on saying,
"Oh God,
going to win by a lot." He's not embracing reality. He will lose, and the establishment of the GOP knows it. So there's going to be battle royal. Rupert Murdoch, media.
Trump hates him now.
Well, Rupert hates Trump. He what did he call him? Humpty Trumpty. You know,
Yes.
You know, he has said that his entire media machine will be turned against Donald Trump to ensure that he's not the nominee.
He's a powerful man, isn't he? I mean, really, he owns most of the press in the world.
One day in your life, you'll remember.
want to move on because we've got a lot to cover. Kevin McCarthy, let's talk about him. Now, he's poised to lead House GOP despite the far-right revolt, I guess. So do you think he will be the Speaker?
He's probably the only one standing who can. Yeah, I think he'll probably be, by default, become the Speaker. And that's about as far as they can think. I don't know any other candidate who's following up on him who he would compete with.
He won a vote today, defeating a far-right candidate. So he's definitely going to be the Speaker. I think it's then more what actually plays out in the House. Mm-hmm. And I think McCarthy's going to have his work cut out in any way trying to unify the different factions that will exist in the GOP caucus. They'll try things like, you know, investigations into Hunter Biden and Joe Biden's
son. They're going to put on theater, yes. They're going to put on lots of investigations and they're going to derail the Trump investigations too.
Yeah, they'll try and do that. And you know, not much is going to happen, if anything, on the legislative front. Biden will just focus on, you know, stuffing judges and getting those through the Senate, which obviously has been happening. But it's going to be just, I think, a two-year circus. And part of me just thinks that, again, they'll get punished for it in 2024, you know?
Okay, now, if you've just joined us, I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Edmonton in Canada and Thomas Booker in San Antonio in Texas. I'm Henry in Sydney for Bondi Tunes International. What happened? Here's a good question for you guys. What happened? The red wave. Where did the red wave go?
It's a good question, actually.
Just to explain, this is for anyone who doesn't understand the red wave. It was expected that the Republicans would, you know, annihilate the Senate, and it just didn't happen.
Well, I think to a degree, Michael Moore's prediction was perhaps correct. I think the main thing that activated the voter base of the Democratic Party, it certainly wasn't the Democratic Party itself, because it's not competent at doing that. But the base turned out, and their base was the millennials. And I think there was enormous anger over the whole Republican agenda of women's rights.
Joe versus Wade.
Yeah, Joe versus Wade.
Sorry. That's a good one. That was a Freudian mistake.
Basically they had a turnout and they had to fight through. I mean, there were lots of obstacles and still are. They're still effective of all the gerrymandering and manipulation in the red states, the Republican states have carried out. So it is impressive that would have been overcome by the voter turnout.
I've got to say, what's impressive to me is that Fox News were calling it the Red Ripple.
Well, you've seen the cartoon of the elephant on the surfboard that's left high on the sand, and the tide's gone out, and he's the elephant sitting there bewildered because his surfboard won't float. So, it's the pundits, the pollsters. Once again, that was all information that was extremely superficial, not very well thought out, and. I'm not surprised, but I am relieved that it turned out that way.
So can we assume that the Democrats have the Senate, Ronan?
No.
Is that a fact? Yeah. Is that a fact?
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, they have 50, 49 for the Republicans. You know, the casting vote of Kamala Harris is there. But we've got this runoff election. Mm-hmm. Going to happen because of sort of the specific rules in Georgia, and they do vary by state. A candidate has to get 50% to win.
Is this the college thing? The college?
Yeah, just their rules in Georgia.
Yeah, the Electoral College, but it's the state of Georgia that has this. Yeah.
So they're going to have a runoff featuring former American footballer Herschel Walker.
Oh, him.
Again, another comeback candidate. Herschel, of course, the man who... And against abortion in every single circumstance, when not one but two women came forward saying,
"I know,"
when his own son did a video,
I saw
him saying what an awful person he was.
I saw that video. It's hilarious.
He'll be up against the incumbent Democratic Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock. So, you know, I think. You know, Trump tonight was saying Herschel Walker is a good man. No, he isn't. But I think what the establishment are actually really fearful of is Trump turning up in Georgia, stumping for Walker, which they will just feel is just an automatic turnoff for voters. They would rather have Ron DeSantis and others stumping for.
Yeah, I just want to let our listeners know we're talking about the half terms and the fallout from it, and it's not over yet. Want to move on? Actually, let's talk about the heist, as I like to call it, because I'm watching The Crown too much on TV. So the heist. Who's got the heist? This is interesting because I think the Republicans will get the House.
Yeah, the Republicans really got it tonight, Henry.
Yeah, they hit
the 218, but it's going to be a small majority, probably somewhere in the region of, I don't know, 10 to 11 seats, something like that. So it's going to be a very small majority. I mean, we were talking about the red ripple. I think some commentators were just calling it the red trickle. So it's not going to be a big majority. McCarthy as Speaker is going to have a very fractious caucus with, you know, the Marjorie Taylor Greens and
but, the does the Republican Party how bad is it if one party, you said this is like very close, I'm not understanding American politics that well, but if the Republicans have the House by a little bit, just a tiny bit, does it make a difference with decision making?
Yes, it does.
Yes, terribly. It's
Biden won't put anything through the House, so his legislative agenda, Henry, is dead. So, and he's not going to focus on that. He got these major bills, the infrastructure and other things that he got done in his first 2 years. So there's no point in Joe Biden proposing any kind of major infrastructure, any kind of major legislation. He's not going to pass the House. He'll focus on the Senate, and he'll focus on nominees and appointing judges and other things that he can get through the Senate. It does rule out, with the Democrats having the Senate, any kind of ludicrous attempt by the House to impeach him. That's just not going to happen.
There'd
be no point, because if there was a trial in the Senate, he'd be automatically acquitted.
Thomas.
Yeah, remember, we have Marjorie Taylor Greene and Bobbitt lady from Colorado, who, there was actually one point where somebody was terrified that Marjorie Taylor Greene might be made Speaker. Both of them are out insane, loudmouth, super. I would call them fascists. I mean, they're just really hideous. And the other issue, though, is that the House and the Senate, it's a very tenuous hold that the Democrats have. And it was pointed out to me there are two people in the Senate right now operating as Democrats who could conceivably change parties and rob the Senate from the Democrats. That's one thing. Or any kind. I think maybe they have 51 people, something, maybe 52 Democrats, but it's not a sure thing, and it may not be as productive as one would think. On the other hand, Biden is pretty good wheeler and dealer. He's familiar with how the place really operates.
He's been doing it forever. Let's face it.
Yeah. He's lived in the Senate forever, and now he's out and he's up. He was vice president, so he presided over the Senate for the duration of the Obama administration, and he's just savvy about a lot of things. So he could conceivably play, work the various branches conceivably, but I'm not feeling in any way comfortable or secure present. It's just too tenuous.
Just letting our listeners know that we're going to talk about the Zuck in a minute, Mark Zuckerberg, the falling empires of in the tech world. But before we do that, I just want to mention, to leave the subject, Carrie Lake in Arizona. Now, this is interesting because...
God.
lost to Democratic Katie Hobbs. Trump is furious about this, isn't he?
He is. There was that interview, she again, she's an election denier in 2020. She she actually said that, Trump won and he should be would need to be another election. He should just be sworn back in.
And I should just mention, we're talking about Arizona here. Did I say that? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, Arizona, the Republican candidate for governor, God help us. But, she put out a tweet, actually, you know, whining and moaning and giving out about Lynn Cheney, who was, you know, former Republican member of Congress and obviously somebody heavily involved in the January 6th committee and going after Donald Trump in a way I admire, actually. A lot of things Lynn Cheney stands for I don't personally agree with, but I do admire her for her work on this. And she put out a really kind of smarmy, sarky tweet, carried it going on about how Lynn Cheney had made donations by running TV ads against her and all this kind of thing, and just whining and moaning about Lynn Cheney and saying what an awful person Lynn Cheney was. And in a really classy act, Lynn Cheney replied on Twitter saying, "You're welcome." Lynn Cheney having revealed that she did vote for her Democratic opponent. So, look, I think Carrie Lake was again, another Trump-backed candidate promoting election denial, and she lost. And the good folk of Arizona. And the thing about Arizona, Henry, is that it has a lot of what I would describe as McCain Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
McCain Republicans are turned off by these people. They have not forgiven or forgotten Donald Trump's, quite frankly, disgraceful attacks.
But is it fair to say, Ronan Seagrave in Canada, is it fair to say that it is a tight state, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it chooses politicians. The Democrats have been quite clever here. They've chosen kind of very centrist candidates who appeal to the kind of John McCain Republicans. I mean, the other one who won also against a Trump election denier, he was running for the Senate, a man called Captain Mark Kelly. He's a former astronaut. He's captained the space shuttle. He's married to Gabby Giffords, who is a congresswoman involved in a horrific mass shooting incident and is still recovering really from her injuries. And Mark has really just taken up the baton of a political career. But he presents himself as a very centrist Democrat, someone who really does appeal to the John McCain Republicans. And I said, those voters who love John McCain and voted him in for near 30 years will neither forgive nor forget Donald Trump's, as I say, disgraceful attacks on him, you know, saying that John McCain was a coward and a failure because he got captured by the Vietnamese, where, you know, he was held 5 years and tortured and refused.
6 years.
Thomas, I just want to bring you in on this because I know you're our spaceman. what are your thoughts?
Oh, well, no, he is a good guy. He is a decent. One of the things that he did, his last mission was to spend over a year in the International Space Station to study the physiological effects of long duration low gravity. And he came back a wreck. His body had kind of fluid had collected all over, like his skin was saggy. Gosh. And he really almost, I mean, I think he was close to death on it, but he managed to pull out of that. And after some really intense therapy, and that he basically made the argument for me why it's stupid to send people to space, but that's another issue. But he is a level-headed, sincere guy. He's intelligent. He's he also was a fighter pilot. He was a naval fighter pilot. So he has the background of having actually served and, you know, actually having had an accomplishment that was very, plus being the husband to Gabby Giffords and seeing her through the trauma that she went through. I mean, she had to have her brain blown out in a gun.
You know, so I was just going to say, Tom, he has been sort of mentioned as a potential presidential candidate, but Mark Kelly's been really clear that that's not an option for him because of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, Gabby Giffords would really not, I think, be able or frankly want to be First Lady. And he said, you know, that's not something he's going to do. But he has been sort of touted as potentially someone electable as a presidential candidate. I think that's probably correct, Thomas.
Yes. Well, I mean, and that I would like to see how his career plays out. Yes, Gabby Giffords has a terrible time with speech. She can't talk as we do. I mean,
neither can you.
No, it's a great effort. It's a great effort.
I'm just kidding.
No, it's a great effort to get words out, and you know, and she's her recovery is astonishing. But I would think if she was a member of Congress, also to be noted, So she would not, I can see where she would not look favorably on a being the first lady. I mean, because that's a...
No, I don't think so. She has Gabby Giffords, as with Mark, you know, dedicated her really her life now to gun control. And again, she's done mm-hmm. yes. admirable work in that, in
it's,
that
it's,
area.
It's actually really, Captain Kelly. It's really quite sad, isn't it?
You know, but if you watch this stuff on Facebook, I mean, she did, when he first was running for Senate, you know, she did a video and she said, look, you know, she was very clear, we're not looking for a sympathy vote here. Mm. But she said, you know, I'm married to a remarkable man. I'm going to tell you why. And it's great that he's carrying on in terms of the political career. And they appear absolutely devoted to each other. But I think that's really the factor that would be, you know, if you were trying to almost manufacture an alternative presidential candidate to Joe Biden, someone like Mark, someone that would spring to mind. But I just think because of Gabby, I don't see it as a button there. You're a good friend around the planet
on iTunes International. We got to move on. If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Edmonton, Canada, and Thomas Booker in San Antonio de Bay in Texas. I'm Henry in Sydney for Bond iTunes International. Let's talk about the Zuck. And Meta failure. Mm-hmm. Now, in case you don't know, it's the parent company created by the Zuck, as in, mm-hmm. you know, Mark Zuckerberg. Parent company of Facebook Metaverse. I mean, you know, actually, you know what? Let's do an audio grab of the Zuck, a humiliating speech he did. Take a listen.
Feeling. I mean, I know that there must be just a range of different emotions. I want to say, you know, up front, that I take full responsibility for this decision. You know, I'm the founder and CEO. I'm responsible for the health of our company, for our direction, and for deciding, you know, how we execute that, including things like this. And this was ultimately my call. And it was, you know, one of the hardest calls that I've had to make in the 18 years of running the company. And a lot of why it's hard is, you know, obviously it has a big impact on your lives. But also, you know, for our mission, we're losing people who, you know, you've really put your heart and soul into this place. And, you know, each of you is talented and passionate, and you know, each of you has played a role in making Meta the success that it is. And you know, no matter what team you may have worked on, you know, each of you played a role in contributing to the products that billions of people use to connect every day.
It was humiliating, wasn't it? And let's talk about the downfall of technology, giant technology companies, guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, his idea apparently was that he was going to try to create a hardware extension to Facebook and his other holdings, and that was what he called Meta. And the big feature of Meta was the hood.
Metaverse.
Yeah, the Metaverse, and then they had a Metaverse hood that you could wear, so I guess you could walk around the house and feel like you're walking through Facebook or something.
Would you do that? Ronan, would you do that?
Well, I think with the Metaverse, I do think that there is a future in this in terms of us, you know, appearing virtually at the meetings and being able to interact. I just think he's got the timing wrong, and that the actual development of, as Thomas was saying, of the hardware solution is just not really compelling enough for people to really want to bring this into sort of the mainstream around how we sort of live and work. And it's really work in terms of where I see the value. So I think it was a miscalculation on that front. I actually know a few people who have been laid off by Facebook. I think if
is
there's
that
one
right?
Massive layoffs at Amazon.
We'll talk about Amazon in a second. I just want to mention the New York Times. And their headline on this very subject, skepticism, confusion, frustration inside Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse struggles. Meta's push to develop virtual and augmented reality technology has had a bumpy year. Bumpy? Well, understatement of the year, I would say.
I think that establishes Zuckerberg as a one-hit wonder or a one-trick pony, as it were. He basically started Facebook, which was his great idea, and he's basically lived off that for all these, you know, since 20, you know, nearly 20 years. But it's turning out that he's not really a very good board chairman. He's not that creative.
He's
or
very
innovative.
Young, though, isn't he? I mean,
relatively young for a CEO. Yeah, he's
young.
But Facebook, it's not that Facebook's failing, it's just that Facebook isn't growing and as popular. Well, and now it's being overtaken by TikTok and Twitter.
You know, it's interesting. I was tracking down someone who lives in my flat. She's a young Irish traveler, and she's up on the Queensland coast because she's a traveler. She's a tourist. And I tried to contact her on Facebook, and I saw that she was on Facebook. And I, you know, because we got something in the mail for her, and I wanted to pass it on to her because she used to live here. And I couldn't get a response on Facebook. So I went to Instagram, and I got a response immediately. Now, this is an interesting point, because young people think that Facebook is for old people. and it's interesting. But the other interesting thing is that Facebook owns Instagram. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know what the Zuck is, what his problem is. He may be losing, you know, not losing, but not gaining traction on Facebook as in numbers. But he's certainly gaining them on Instagram, which he owns.
Yeah, he's been shrewd enough in that, Henry, by buying both Instagram and WhatsApp.
Very so, smart, yeah.
You know, the technology that's more social media platforms and communication platforms, that they're more appealing to younger people. I think, you know, long term, there is a future in the metaverse. I think the issues have just been, you know, too much too soon, or just not.
Say, yeah.
Yeah, just the hardware is not good enough and those type of things, and just too much hype early on. And I think that the lack, I don't know whether this is partially down to Sheryl Sandberg, who was sort of his number two, they're leaving the company and suddenly there's a gap here, and that's what sort of played out. I think the other elephant in the room around what's happening in tech is Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter.
Oh, yes.
Which you could say about Zuckerberg, at least he put out a video. Unfortunate employees of Twitter who were fired only found out when they were essentially locked out of their email.
And the rest of them were told to go back to the office, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, yes. The rest of them are still there. Yeah, I've been told to go back to the office. The whole leadership team is gone.
How many people, do you know how many people in Twitter are gone?
I think it was probably half the workforce, wasn't it? Something.
Yes, I think it was significant, maybe even more. But his move was stumbling and clumsy and incoherent,
and stubborn.
Yes, he refused to say that this. You know, come to the realization that this is a mistake. You know, which is going to be kind of hard to do after you try to hire back all the people that you told. You know,
do you guys use Twitter?
I don't like it.
I don't use it. I mean, you know, I was speaking to our Australian political correspondent, Adam Devlin, some months ago, and I asked both him and Melissa Grima in Melbourne, another correspondent, I said, what do you do when you first wake up in the morning? Where do you go on the web? And Adam Devlin said Twitter. And so did Melissa. And I thought, I never go to Twitter. I don't understand. I think they think they can get their news fastest from Twitter, and they may be correct. I mean, I just have no interest in Twitter whatsoever.
Well, I don't use Facebook to go find news. I mean, I go to news websites. Oh,
well, that's a good idea.
I don't understand the whole thing about.
And it's the same with Twitter. You know, like that's not news; it's gossip.
But I mean, in terms of Facebook, it's a nice palette for me, because I can I feel like I can express myself and share ideas better on Facebook than I can on Twitter. So superficial.
And of course, Thomas, you never get kicked off, do you?
Yeah, you're right. There's a pitfall.
I got seriously kicked off for about a month.
Moderation.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Something to do
community
with
standards.
It's something community standards. I'm
community
thinking,
standards.
Does Facebook have community standards? I didn't know that.
Allegedly.
We got to go soon. We have to mention Jeff Bezos, of course. Mm-hmm. Amazon. Now, the thing about Facebook, it's let about 10,000 people go, as far as I understand, mm-hmm. and very similar, 11,000 people let go from Amazon. I'm just wondering what's going on in the broader spectrum.
Well, it sounds to me like with Amazon, they've been developing robotic systems, and I think they're finally able to make the place, the factories, through fulfillment centers. Excuse me, it's a fulfillment center.
Is that right?
That yes, that's what they call the warehouses where they have all the goods, and the robots go in and pick out the packages now and put the mailing labels on them and everything like that and spit them out.
Well, when the people were working there, they had toilet break times and that kind of thing. You know,
they were complaining. They were complaining about workplace conditions that were just outrageous, where they were constantly supervised. They didn't have the liberty to, go take a whiz when they needed to.
It's disgraceful.
It was like a sweatshop, the 21st century sweatshop.
In the most powerful country in the world. And yes. All the other countries that, let's not forget, Amazon is everywhere. Ronan, I want to talk about the whole spectrum of technology. And it reminds me of the 2000 crunch, when they thought all the zeros. What was that called? The millennium.
The millennium bug.
It reminds me of that because that cost billions of dollars. And I'm wondering if we look at the broader spectrum of what's going on with these monster companies, if this is going to continue, and if we just have to sit back and start again, because we've got it, we've moved too fast, they're too big, they're too powerful. I, for one, will not use Amazon. I can't stand them. But the problem is, it's really hard not to use Amazon
it's a fascinating business story. It is a fascinating business story. I think Amazon for years lost money.
Weren't they a book company?
Yeah, they were exclusively
a book company.
He just built it up and built it up until it became multi-billion dollar. I think Thomas is right that a lot of what's driving this is automation and robotics and sort of, from their perspective, making things more efficient. I think technology and technology companies continuously evolve. And I do think, the metaverse, augmented reality, virtual reality, these other things use of holograms are going to become more mainstream, but over a period of time. Social media will probably become even more interactive. But I don't see... I think social media for the foreseeable future is going to be around in some shape or form. How we use it and how we interact it and how platforms we use may shift and will certainly become more interactive and video-based and maybe augmented and virtual reality-based going forward. I think
3D Zoom meetings.
Yeah, 3D Zoom meetings, virtual, like you're in the room. I think the other thing that was interesting around this announcement, it was preceded by an interview and announcement by Jeff Bezos, where he donated $100 million to Dolly Parton's charitable foundations. I mean, Dolly Parton's a wonderful philanthropist. Mm-hmm. And he then did an interview where he said he planned to give virtually all of his fortune away to good causes and that type of thing. So the other thing I think has to be said is that Jeff Bezos is not actively involved in Amazon anymore. So whatever decisions they're making, they're being made by the current leadership, doesn't really particularly involve him.
Yeah, I think I think Bezos is planning on becoming a 21st century version of the 19th century robber barons who made their fortunes and then decided to invest them in philanthropical endeavors such as the Carnegie Foundation and the Ford Foundation and all of that. So he may be having a Bezos Foundation.
The problem is, Thomas, I don't think he's ever going to become a kind of Bill Gates type figure. You know, Bill Gates is a more kind of nerdy.
I was just going to mention him because
just a different image and persona. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, Melinda had she had her own opinions of him too. So.
Well, apparently she's dating somebody. But I think the other thing was that Gates had, unlike Bezos, Gates had a very clear focus around what he wanted to do. It was the vaccines and polio and malaria.
Yep.
Melinda's just, it was very strategic. Whereas with Bezos, we're not really seeing that. We're seeing, he's giving money to Dolly Parton, he's talking about a foundation, but it's not really immediately clear what it is he wants to do.
But
he may want to do a space foundation. That's his other big kick is he wants to his rocket ship. He's supposed to be building big giant rocket ships for NASA.
He should get together with Trump and do Space Wars.
Yeah.
Space Force, yeah.
We don't Space Force, sorry. But do you think psychologically, like, what is it? Because these guys are businessmen, right? What's in it for them? Do they want to just look good, or do they genuinely care?
I think Gates does genuinely care. If you look at what he's done on vaccines, it's very hard to say that he doesn't. You know, his sort of passion around ridding the world of polio and malaria. I think these are things he is genuinely passionate about. I think with Gates, Gates was coming for a place that he did not want his children inheriting, billions of dollars. He didn't think that was healthy or good. You know, he would have money to help them buy houses, but he would want them to make their own way in the world. And I think he was coming from that place. I think the other thing with these guys is legacy. You know, there's one thing around building, tech giants like Microsoft and Amazon, but that you also kind of change the world and that you kind of change the world in a positive way, and that people will remember you not as some kind of ruthless business tycoon, but actually, they made billions and you can look at how they made their money, but then they actually gave it all away for good causes and did things. You know, Bill Gates will go down in history for his work on polio and malaria and even around COVID. So I think it's legacy, but in a way that is different from, just being remembered as a kind of big business tycoon.
Yeah.
Well, the original nerd. So
he was the original Bill Gates nerd. Yeah.
Okay. Final thoughts on what's going down in the United States of America after the midterms and with all the drama going on with Trump announcing his candidacy in 2024 to a third attempt at this. Well, the first attempt was successful, of course. Final thoughts on this, guys?
No. I don't think that we're going to be charging ahead into the 21st century. I think a lot of it, I think, was it 8.8 billion people in the world now?
Yes, they've just, I thought it just came up to the 8 billion mark.
Well, 8 billion mark, which is enough. And that we're still trying to work out an international agreement on climate change, and it still isn't happening. So I think that's going to be what basically the next 2 years are going to be working into. I don't know what Europe is going to be like. I don't know if there's going. I'm still wondering what the European Union is going to be doing to come to welcome these accords. So I think that's going to be the sword that's going to be hanging over us, Damoclean sword.
Ronan, final thoughts.
Look, I think if this is as it looks right now, shaping up to being, Trump v. Biden round two in 2024. If that's what happens, Joe Biden will win again.
Mm-hmm.
The first battle.
I'm going to hold you to that, Ronan.
No,
I agree. I think he's right. Yes.
I think Biden will win again. I think the first battle, though, is going to be between Trump and Ron DeSantis and the two wings of the Republican Party, having it out, duking it out over the next year or so. And we just got to see what happens and whether Trump is relying on his base and getting, his base turning out and getting through the primaries and being the nominee. But there will be a much stronger focus and campaign by the Republican Party to ensure that doesn't happen and that DeSantis is the nominee. So it's going to be absolutely fascinating how this plays out.
Okay. We've got to go now. Ronan Seagrave in Edmonton in Canada and Thomas Booker in San Antonio de Bayar, our correspondents in North America. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure as always, Henry. Take care.
Good to see this you, Ronan.
You too, Thomas.
This is not the Waltons. Good night, John Boy. This is, in fact, Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you. Shall it be a sin if I can't help falling in love with you? Like a river flows surely to the sea, darling, so it goes. Some things are meant to be. Take my hand, take my whole life too, for I can't help falling in love with you. Like a river flows surely to the sea, darling, so it goes. Some things are meant to be. Take my hand, take my whole life too, for I can't help falling in love with you. For I can't help falling in love.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.